Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my good buddy, Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. What do we got going this week?
Well, this is Turkey Week.
I know. Do you have your Thanksgiving ribs yet?
No, I don't have my Thanksgiving ribs. I know you do.
Yeah, we're doing ribs Thursday.
And yours are gluten-free ribs, right?
Oh, yeah, you can count on it.
Our fan base, they appreciate the gluten-freeness of our food.
So are we taking off after this, or are we going to do some work this week? What's in front of us for the High Velocity Boys?
We don't do any work.
Well, I know that.
The High Velocity organization. I think we probably should talk about our next little venture, our little speed school.
Let's definitely talk. Let's use the free advertising right now. Go for it.
Well, all I did was do video work all yesterday, recording the video briefings as part of this thing. So that's how I spent my Sunday.
Well, I'm tickled to death because, you know, our plan was we were going to launch speed school at the first of the year. And it looks like we're going to be able to launch at least by December 7th. And our internal deadline actually is December 1. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to, for those of you who don't know, and I think most of our listeners do, the focus of our consulting practice is to solve the sales problem for consultants. One of the challenges that we consistently run into, though, some of those folks that could really use our help the most, they can't afford us. And so our solution is this web-based curriculum where not just Todd and I, but experts in a variety of specialties are providing instruction through video, audio, and of course there are job aids and additional resources in a 52-week curriculum, and I'm tickled to death that we're going to have an opportunity to release this in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting, having a lot of fun. I'm already getting some good interest in it, so
yeah.
I think there's a market that needs that, and I think it's going to be a great tool to serve that community.
We're going to have a ball with it. But that's not what today is about. Today we have a really different kind of show set up. It's more of a roundtable format, and I'm delighted to introduce to you this morning a couple of gentlemen. The first is a gentleman by the name of Michael Blake, who is Director of Evaluation Services for a firm I can't pronounce, but we'll learn more about that later. And we also have Mr. Scott Burkett, who in some ways works directly with Michael, and then I get the sense that he does some things on his own as well.
I don't
think
we have a clue what Scott really does, and he's one of those entrepreneurial guys, and we'll let him tell us.
Yeah, so welcome to the show, Mike and Scott.
Oh, thanks for having us, guys.
Thanks.
Well, we are delighted to have you. I tell you what, let's start with you, Mike. Tell us a little bit about what in the world Valuation Services really entails, and maybe we ought to also start with the name of this firm I can't pronounce.
Yes, well, correct pronunciation is Habif, Arigetti, and Wynn. And we're the largest independent accounting firm in the southeastern United States, and I run the valuation practice, which basically means I'm a business appraiser. So my job is to appraise businesses and business assets like patents and other intellectual property or stock, securities, and privately held companies, and I tell you what I think they're worth.
And do you ever find when you go in and evaluate a business that what they're really worth, because you've got some science, some structure, some discipline, some rigor around all this, what the business is really worth is sometimes a slightly different number than what the business owners think the business is worth?
No, I sometimes find that it's really different, like almost delusionally so. But, you know, part of it is that, you know, my report doesn't buy the business. And, you know, a lot of people say, will say in terms of value, that a value of a business is worth whatever somebody else is willing to pay for it. And that's true to an extent, except, you know, it doesn't really factor in the knucklehead factor. And just because some knucklehead pays something for a business, right? If I sell you this bottle of water for $10, that doesn't mean I can turn around and find some other knucklehead to sell this thing for $10. So even though somebody bought it at that price, that's not the value of the asset. That's just what somebody paid for it. And that's probably the most difficult concept to get across to clients, that they'll say, you know, my buddy sold this business for, you know, 3x sales or 5x EBITDA. I said, well, you know, good for them. I mean, go see if that guy will buy your business too.
Now, do you specialize in a specific type of industry?
Not so much industries, but I do a lot of intellectual property valuation. I do a lot of patents, do a lot of early stage stuff, do a lot of venture stuff. Probably just because my background is gravitated that way. I'm a recovering investment banker and a reforming venture capitalist. So I've spent my entire life with emerging companies.
Michael, what does a down economy do to that sector? Is that increase the amount of sales in business, or is it decrease, or is it the same?
Due to which sector?
The amount of businesses that are sold.
Yeah, you know what happened? It really, what the correction about 15 months ago did is it took all the motor oil out of the engine and it just seized up almost instantly. And what happens is you get sort of a buy-sell or a bid-ask spread is that whenever you have a correction like that, the buyers are saying, yippee, I can buy stuff on the cheap now. And the sellers are saying, no, not so fast. You know, I was going to get $10 million for this business. And it takes a while for that reality to set in. And you have willing buyers and willing sellers that can't close the gap on the price. You throw in the additional monkey wrench, the banks will not lend you money to buy a business anymore. So all of a sudden, you got to come up with the cash, you got to convince the seller to provide a note or finance that business for you. And that makes it a lot more difficult. There's a lot of liquidity that's been taken out of the market to actually go out and buy those businesses, even if you can't agree on the price. So it's really a liquidity issue from both those sides that's preventing or, you know, hindering buying and selling of businesses. So I'll tell you, at sort of the sub-Wall Street Journal level, I mean, you see not a lot of deals happening at sort of the $500 million level and up. There's a lot of stuff going on at, say, the $10 million and under.
Is that right?
Yep. And I think it's because the sellers can be flexible in terms of their financing, where you can more people can plausibly pay cash in the barrel for a $10 million business. But you want to go pay $500 million. Not many people can write that check.
So, Scott, how do you fit into this equation?
Well, I'm basically the guy that Mike follows around with a fire extinguisher and just tries to, you know, keep me in check. Yeah, basically. So I'm basically a serial entrepreneur, born and raised in Georgia. And right now I'm actually my day job. I know we're not here to talk about that, but you know what? I'm going to pimp it anyway.
Pimp away.
Pimp it all you want. Well,
that's a lovely fur coat you're
wearing.
Well,
it is. And you've heard of the cheetah. Well, no, that's actually not my business. But actually, I'm the chief operating officer of a company called Starpound Technologies, and we are an Atlanta-based software company that focuses on helping companies automate their business processes and make them on demand. So it's a pretty fun thing. But yeah, that's my story. That's it. I'm sticking to it.
Well, you know, I tried to do my homework a little bit on you, particularly, Mike, last week before we got to the show. And I know in reading one of the articles that you have published, you talk about the seller reducing the perceived risk. Talk a little bit more about that, if you will, and maybe share with our listeners some of the things that you can do when you're preparing to sell your business to reduce that perceived risk for the buyer.
Well, you know, it's all about reducing risk whenever you sell anything. It could be a car. You know, the tires look a little worn. Put new tires in the car. Put a new coat of paint. Same thing with a business, right? You make it easier to buy, easier to look at. You're going to get more people that are interested. And the same goes in the venture side when you're raising capital. You know, Scott and I have the connection through Startup Lounge. And the thing that we do most is we're advising people in the Startup Lounge community when they're selling their businesses or selling stock in their businesses that they've got to reduce the perceived risk. They've got to make it as easy as possible for somebody to learn about, investigate the business, get comfortable with the entrepreneur, and buy the thing.
You know, I don't know if Scott was blowing smoke up my skirt or not out here in the lounge, but he said you guys have like something like 17,000-18,000 community members around this startup.
Well, why don't we step back for a minute and tell us the story of Startup Lounge? I mean, it's I think you said it's
sure.
just about 3 years old.
Yeah, it was Mike reminded me a couple of days ago, Mike. Three years ago, yeah, a couple
We've
days ago.
We've lasted as long as Star Trek.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
You think they're going to have people dressed like you at Dragon Con?
I doubt that. Well, actually, they do have people dressed like me at Dragon Con, but it has nothing to do with the fact that they knew who I am. It's just... You know, a couple of years ago, I sold a small software company, I guess it was 04, 05, and Mike and I got to know each other at that time. And, you know, I sort of came up for air and looked around in the Atlanta startup, community, and really just, you know, wasn't excited about what I saw. And Mike and I started talking about it and talking about it, then drinking some more. And we just said, you know, let's do something about it. You know, let's actually... not necessarily try to solve the problem, but let's try to promote a healthy dialogue as it were. So we basically sort of made a list of all the things that we thought that Atlanta could be better at, you know, in terms of startups. And when I say startups, let me also delineate between a small business and what we call a fast growth startup, something that is a venture backable sort of play, and that's really where our focus is, and that typically involves software, technology, clean tech, biotech, those kinds of things, and we just pulled up two microphones and said, hey, let's do this thing called a podcast, and we did, and we were our own first guests, as it were, which. Went over about like a hand grenade in a small, crowded marketplace.
Program.
But yeah, it was, we just went out in our network and we started bringing on really great guests, you know, like you guys. We was bringing on Chris Klaus and Mitch Free and just people who had been there and done that. And we had a real conversation with them. And we didn't talk about, tell us your story, tell us how great it is to be rich now, they're more than happy to do that. People love to talk about that. But we just started talking about Atlanta and what can we do as a community to be better. And it just took off. It just took off from there.
And so where can we get to Startup Lounge? Where is it?
Startup Lounge, it's in an alleyway down in Midtown. No, you just go to startuplounge.com, and we have all of our podcasts on there, 40-some-odd now, I believe.
42?
42. The answer to life, the universe, and everything, 42.
There you
right?
go.
And we have all of the information about our various events and podcasts, things like that on there. So
you've been around 3 years. Now, 3 years ago in the new modern world of marketing is almost a generation ago. And so has the technology of podcasting changed? Is the world accepting them? I think you're just seeing a lot more of that now.
I don't think the technology has necessarily changed. Certainly it's improved. I think the adoption is certainly there. And we had a certain challenge, too, when we started ours. You guys remember this, and I guess to some extent it's still that way. People love bite-sized podcasts, right? So you're sitting on the train, you're on the plane, you want to listen to a 10, 15-minute, sort of deal. Our first podcast was like an hour and a half long. We said, nobody's going to listen to this thing. This is ridiculous. Just two monkeys sitting up at a microphone talking for an hour and a half. And our podcast will typically go, about an hour, hour and a half?
Hour and
it
a
really
half.
Depends. And, we just said, look, we want the person that listens to that podcast to listen to it for the right reasons. And if you don't want to listen to it because it's an hour and a half long, you're not the person that we want to help, right? And we found for some bizarre reason that works. It may not work for everybody who's into podcasting, but it certainly works here. We were also able to take advantage, and I think, Mike, you would agree, of the pent-up energy that was here in Atlanta. People would listen to it for an hour and a half long because they wanted to hear what that venture capitalist thought about that particular sector or whatever.
Oh, no question. I mean, most venture capitalists, up until about 2 years ago, ran around town like they're in the Popemobile, right? I mean, you couldn't get within 500 yards of them, and the way this town operated was the only way you could meet millionaires is to yourself be a millionaire. Well, that's great, but you're not the one looking for the angel investment then. So, maybe a guy like a Charlie Paparelli will get on a panel or something, or he'll give a talk, or a Stephen Fleming, or one of the other noted, or Sig Mosley, one of the other noted VCs.
Or Stone Payton or somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Yeah, right, sure. Right.
They're not easy to get to.
They got their people. They got their handlers.
Right. Got the PR flack,
But because they were targets in the marketplace, frankly, for people like me, because I'm a service provider, so it's my job to sell people stuff like accounting and tax and junk, they do their thing, they get up on their panel, and then they just duck out the back door.
They run.
Like, it's like Elton John after a second encore, right. just in the limo, boom, gone. And so the reason the podcast works, I think, with the length that it does is that here's the opportunity to listen in on a long, in-depth sit-down with guys that are generally inaccessible to most entrepreneurs in the market. And you should listen to the whole thing because that's where all of your information is going to come from. And, we ask a few softball questions, but, we ask them the tough questions that the entrepreneurs need to understand.
So what's the secret to getting to them, though? How do you get all these great guests?
Yeah. Well, I've got
tax returns.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, he works at an accounting firm, tax and accounting firm, and need I say any more? One of the things I think that we were very fortunate to stumble over to was a lot of the successful folks in the community wanted they wanted the same things we wanted. They wanted Atlanta to be better, and once we sort of provided a vehicle for them, we really didn't have a problem finding people and going out into our network, obviously, and bringing those folks on. But they were very excited about it. Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to not do a softball, you know, tell me how great it is sort of interview, but really get down to the brass tacks. You know, tell us the five things that really you struggle with in building that, that billion-dollar company. Okay, sure.
Well, the other thing that helped, and Scott's being modest, is that it was his network. Like, the first eight guests are all, like, personal friends of his, and they're important people in town.
The only eight friends I have.
So well, but they're good eight friends, right?
They're not friends anymore. So that's, you know,
once I heard the edited podcast.
That's true.
No, but, you know, they came on, and you know, he's going, you know, let's get Chris Klaus on the podcast. Okay, great. How do we do that? Well, I'll call him. Let's get Stephen Fleming on the – well, how do you do that? Well, I'll call him. How do you get Mitch Free on the podcast? Well, I'll call him. So I'm sitting there, well, great. You know, hey, this podcast, great. So – but once we got that caliber of person on and we didn't – you know, we didn't 60 minutes him, right? I mean, we decided early on you can be Mike Wallace with a guy like that once.
That's true.
And then after that, right. You're never going to – you know, it's going to be just losers like me and Scott going to be coming on the podcast.
Now Jim Smith joining us today.
Yeah. So that's right. You know, we don't want to play sort of amateur investigative journalist. but at the same time, once people figured out that we could get the kind of people that were hard to access by themselves in the marketplace, it started to almost develop a viral quality to it. And I think our guests genuinely enjoy being on the program as long as they can get by the profanity.
And the nudity.
Yeah, you know, it's well, okay. There was that unfortunate exposure incident.
Yeah, well, I saw the website. That was awful.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's you got to take one for the team when you come into the lounge. Yeah,
they say 2010 is the year of the video, but you're, right. In your all's case, wow.
It's the year of the arrest.
It is. It's the year of the indictment. Isn't that the Chinese calendars? 2010 is the year of the indictment?
The year of the orange jumpsuit.
Right, yeah.
I want to hit you guys with the same question Todd and I get all the time. I'm really interested in how you answer this. So how does all this translate to making money?
Yeah. You know, that's a very good question. And, you know, Mike is going to jump in here in a minute, I know. But one of the questions that we got asked probably for the first year and a half, I don't know, 2 years of doing Startup Lounge was, I don't get it. You guys are a nonprofit, okay, and you're doing this podcast. You're not charging anybody. You do these events that we do where we put entrepreneurs and investors in a room. You don't charge anybody. You know, what's the angle? Where's your taste? How are you getting paid? And, you know, we basically just said, we're not. It is a nonprofit organization. A lot of people think or thought for a while that, you know, there's something there with those guys. They're doing something. Either they're getting a piece of this or a taste of that or a percentage point of that. It really wasn't about that. We founded it because we wanted to make a difference. And I think that's the thing that people in the community are finally coming to terms with. The reason I think that's important is we've established a level of trust, both with the investment community as well as the entrepreneurs. The goal is to make money, but it's not for us to make money. It's for those entrepreneurs to make money.
Wow, that was a really good answer.
Yes, did you write it down?
Well, now I want to get the truth.
How about that?
Okay,
let's get the real answer.
Yeah, now
get
the real answer.
You know, we're communists.
Exactly.
Which is ironic because Scott gave 2 to 3 years of his life defending us against communism on the Czech-German border.
It was all me, baby.
Protecting us from errant snowballs from the communists.
And stale gummy bears, yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the whole idea is, you know, Mark Twain once wrote that everybody complains about the weather, nobody does anything about it. And everybody was complaining about the weather in Atlanta for startups. And, you know, why don't we do something about it, right? I mean, look, we have a nonprofit, and we're involved in trying to help people become millionaires and realize their dreams. And that's not a noble goal like building houses or curing cancer or feed. We get it, right? But on the other hand, you know, speaking for myself, you know, I have no skills to feed, clothe, shelter, or heal anybody. And I'm a danger to myself and others when I try. I mean, do not accept a house that I worked on Habitat with.
That's right.
I mean, you're just asking for trouble. But the one thing I do know something about is how to cultivate early stage businesses in the venture capital area. So, you know, why not? And then for me on the back end, getting your name out there and being associated with a Startup Lounge brand is helpful. And, you know, I don't ask for any business for HANW through my Startup Lounge persona. I don't need to. When people are ready, they need a valuation, they need that kind of advice, and it's appropriate for them to get that, then they know the person to call.
Yeah, and let's also credit your firm, Mike, HNW, who has an amazing spirit of community about them. And they are one of our sponsors, and they've done an amazing job of helping us in any way they can, whether it's freeing up your time or giving us space to work out of or helping us with the events and things like that. So kudos to your firm, too.
And they were sponsored before I joined. So, you know, this isn't like a total kiss-ass thing.
That's true. That's true.
They sponsored, then I joined the firm, not not the other way around.
So there really is some path, though, to some of these guests. They get to know you. They trust you. They're getting genuine value from the experience at the Startup Lounge. They know what kind of business you do.
Yep.
And in many cases, they are prospective clients for you. You don't have to hammer them over the head with buy my stuff, but when they are ready for the kind of services you provide, you're certainly one of the people they're going to genuinely consider talking to.
Well, they're clients and referral sources, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think a guest has ever been a client, but listeners certainly have been. And you know, through that, I stunned people with this. I've actually gotten engagements over Twitter. You can do business over Twitter. It is possible.
I thought you said you got engaged over Twitter. I'm like, does your wife know about this? What is that about?
Well, one of them does.
Oh, that's true. One of my wives.
Exactly. So there is that element, and there's the personal branding, right? I mean, one of the great things that Startup Lounge, I think I get a lot more out of Startup Lounge than I give to it. And one of the reasons for that is being one of the Startup Lounge guys is a very comfortable persona to have in the marketplace, as opposed to being H&W here, I'm here to sell you professional services. No, I mean, there are a lot of places I don't even hand out an H&W business card, because when I say, look, I'm one of the Startup Lounge guys, I'm here to help, I want to learn about your business and try to help you, it immediately puts people at ease. And that's a much better persona than sort of being, here's a guy who's just another accountant.
Well, people think a certain way about Stone, but when they hear you host a radio show, then it suddenly becomes cool.
That's true.
We get that. We understand.
There you go. It's good to be part of the media, isn't it?
It is.
In reading that article that I read, all that great homework that I did, it occurred to me all of the advice that you're giving people to follow in preparation for selling their business, you ought to do this stuff even if you're not going to sell your business. I mean, say more about some of the key disciplines that you ask these people to exercise, and how and why that plays into selling the business effectively or just continuing to run a business effectively.
Well, there are lots of things that are best practices in business that people don't necessarily execute on a day-to-day basis, right? And if you look in the neighborhood, which are the best maintained houses in your neighborhood? They're the ones that are about to go up for sale, right?
That's
the
right.
New coat of paint, they just repaved the drive, unless it's a foreclosure house.
Well, that and the one retired guy at the end of the cul-de-sac. Well, I do not like this guy.
The homeowner's president, yeah. Invariably, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Your trash cans are visible from the street. That's really...
But, when you get ready to sell something, boy, all of a sudden, that fresh coat of paint matters.
Yeah, the books get balanced of a sudden,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Boy, I got to learn
books?
How to do QuickBooks.
Maybe the books?
That's right. The hastily scrawled books.
The thing is that, I mean, yeah, there are things that the margin help your business on a day-to-day basis, but there are people who've owned their business for 30 years and they never kept accounting records. They have an external accountant who does their tax return, and they've done fine. And operationally, that works. It's just... Then when you try to bring a stranger in to understand the business, you got to sort of meet them halfway. You got to professionalize it. You've got to put in processes and procedures that, weren't all that important when you were just operating the business. But as you position it for sale, it's that fresh coat of paint all of a sudden becomes more important.
So how fresh is the paint on Star Pound? Is that the name of it?
Star Pound? Well, yeah. We're we've been around for, I guess, coming up on 5 years. Nora Mosley, Venture Partners here in town, is a significant investor in our fund. We were actually founded by Michael McChesney, who is one of the co-founders of S1. So the paint is the paint looks good, although it is 4 or 5 years old. So we say we're a startup, even though we're 4 or 5 years into it, and I think... I would caution a lot of companies too, as you're growing, to try to do everything you can to retain that culture of startupness. That fast, fluid. You never know what the next day is going to bring, but you know what? You're there because you want to wear 10 hats every day. So we're a mature startup. How about that?
Well, there's a different attitude. Yeah. You're a little bit more courageous. You're a little more willing to try
true.
Some things.
That's true.
I've seen. Yeah. It's funny you say that because I've seen a lot of other thought leadership out there talking about that same theme.
Yeah, culture is important. In a startup world in particular, where you are wearing so many hats. In fact, we were talking about Jason Jones just outside here today. He does a great podcast called Battlefield to Business. I was on his podcast, and we were talking about lessons from the military and how they applied to startups. And one of the things that I likened a startup to is a small squad or a small unit in the military. And small unit tactics apply. I was a tank gunner in the Army. All right, if the tank gets disabled, guess what? You're instant infantryman. All right. So guess what? If you can't shoot a rifle or carry a pack or do all the things that you were trained to do, you know, secondarily to your primary job, you're going to fail. And in a small team of four or five people, if one person goes down in a military unit, that causes problems. Very much the same way in a startup. You know, there's a lot more risk, and the risk is applied at almost minuscule task-based level sometimes, and you don't have that in big companies. You know, you don't have that. And trying to retain your culture through all that chaos is almost impossible sometimes.
Well, we're 2 weeks past Veterans Day, so thank you service.
And, thank you very much.
We appreciate it.
You were going to say we're 2 weeks past chaos at
High Velocity. That's right.
Well, we're always 2 weeks past chaos at High Velocity.
You guys have nice digs here, Mike. I think we may have to come up here and start doing our thing here, man. This is
absolutely
nice. This is a lot nicer than your office.
Got the sound panels.
Yeah,
here, sound absorbing
nice,
panels,
man. Yeah.
So I don't think you said it earlier, but you told us before the show you have a pretty respectable audience listening to that podcast.
Yeah, we do. It's very strange. You know, we got about 100 people that started pulling in our feed, and we're like, wow, that's kind of cool. There's actually 100, you know, people in the world with nothing else better to do than to listen to the two of us yap on.
It shows you can sell 100 of anything.
That's exactly right. You know, we get an entrepreneur that says, you know, nobody's buying my product. We're like, I don't want to hear that because, you know, look, we can do it. But you know what? That became 1,000, which became 5,000. All of a sudden, the last count, a few months ago, 17,000 or 18,000 people, and it's just bizarre.
Did you do anything to push that?
Not at all. It's just word of mouth.
There was just good content, and people were just sharing
it. It's just word. You know, this is one of the things that I think this will be my third New Year's resolution in a row, Mike, where we sit down and say, you know, this year I'm really going to make an effort to try to promote our stuff, and you know. Yeah, right. We have day jobs, right? So a lot of time. In fact, you were asking me before the show, you know, do you do it once a month or whatever? We used to, and now it's like, yeah, we should probably do that again. We should probably do another podcast because it is a lot of time, as you guys know, to you know, do the research for show and to edit and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for Stone.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of work for Stone. Well, you know, he was saying that he does carry a sort of unbalanced load of the work around.
Yeah, we don't want to start anything here.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything. But
I think the word piano on my back was mentioned.
I read it on the internet, so it must be true. You know, so.
So listening to you fellows talk about the podcast, you really seem to talk a lot about Atlanta and the community here and the players in the Atlanta VC market. But 3 years hence and 17, 18,000 subscribers, are you getting an audience from outside of Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we've been asked to go to Berlin and the Philippines.
I'm like, I'm not going back to Berlin. I did my time there already. Sorry. Alles klar, später. No, I'm not going back over there.
Apparently, there's an MBA professor in Toronto that makes our podcast required listening as part of the curriculum.
Now, that's some scary stuff right there, man.
I mean, don't do business with Canada.
No,
I mean, that's a lesson right there.
The Philippines and just bizarre places. And they're like, you know, can you come do your Capital Lounge event here? And we're like, no. You know, no. I mean, and I think one of the things that we want to do and what we're trying to do is sort of open source our methodology, our philosophy. Here's how we do things. And if you want to take it in your neck of the woods and go off and, you know, have at it. That's fine. That's fine. You know, but again, we have no desire to calibrate.
So are you staying true and talking strictly about the Atlanta community when you're on?
We talk a lot about the Atlanta community, and I would say the Southeast, but it does sort of gravitate towards Atlanta. But I'll tell you, the thing that we noticed probably about a year into this is as we started getting emails from people and just bizarre requests, and we'd get some strange ones.
Hence the nudity.
That's exactly right. But, you know, we found out that basically anybody outside of Silicon Valley has a similar set of problems to Atlanta. And I think there's sort of that universal appeal of Startup Lounge. We talk about Atlanta personalities sometimes. We'll talk about certain companies here in Atlanta. And that really does kind of pertain to Atlanta specifically. But when we start talking about the underserved capital market here and what entrepreneurs have to do to think out of the box to get that first customer or to meet the investor halfway, and we start talking about the cultural aspects of Atlanta, we found that they actually apply more times than not around the world. It's almost universal.
Do all your guests, are they in the studio with you, or do you have anybody phone in?
We do both.
We phone it in each and every time.
Yeah, exactly. We've done a few over the phone, and those are fun. But, you know, to us, it's a lot more fun if the guest is there because you can actually see the reaction on their face when you take your clothes off, things like that, you know. Is this thing on? Are we on satellite? We are on satellite,
this is,
right?
This is a practice run. We're doing the real one.
Okay, good deal. Well, in that case, you know,
Mike, you touched on Twitter a little while ago. So this whole social media thing, are you guys trying to capitalize on that? And if so, what kind of results are you getting from it?
Well, it's not a concerted effort. Scott and I didn't say one day, we've got to capitalize on social media. But, you know, the podcast is itself social media. And everything I've learned about social media, I've learned through this podcast. And it's really more an issue that if you want to be a player in the tech community in Atlanta, you have to be on social media.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's where everybody's spending their time. And a lot of the big players and guys, frankly, of an older generation that you wouldn't think are big on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook, on it all the time.
Yeah. Hmm.
And
yeah,
very accessible.
You know, and actually one of the things that we've seen is 3 years ago when we started Startup Lounge, we had some very specific things that we wanted to accomplish. And, you know, 3 years later, this is a different Atlanta in terms of high-tech startups, fast-growth startups. And we kind of asked the question the other day. We were doing an interview, and Gene Creech said, hey, you know, what do you attribute the changes in the Atlanta startup ecosystem to over the past couple of years? And our answer was social media. I mean, without social media, the community didn't have a voice. You know, we didn't have that voice through Twitter and blogs and podcasts and things like that. And now we do. Now there's a real dialogue happening with investors and startup entrepreneurs and angels out there, and it's happening over Twitter. It's happening over blogs. It's awesome.
Well, one of the points you made earlier was that it was hard to find and get to some of these people. And, and what I found in the time I've spent on social media is that some of these big players out in the world are very accessible on things
they
like
very much, in fact, they prefer it because it's spot. They can do it very quickly, and you know, you're not sucking an hour of their lunchtime down. You know, they would rather reserve that for that power lunch with Mr. Blake there, you know?
Absolutely.
And it lets them be more selective. It gives them more control over how much time they invest in that exercise.
And they also realize, too, that I think a lot of these folks had a fundamental branding and messaging or marketing issue too, especially the investors here. I mean, Atlanta was perceived and still is by some to be a very closed loop community as it pertains to investors. We're opening that up, not Startup Lounge, but we, the community, are opening that up now, and investors are participating. It's almost like they always wanted to, but they just didn't know how. And it's very cool. It's very cool to see. In fact, we see more VCs now, Mike, coming into Atlanta looking for deals.
We do.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're from another town, and they'll come to Atlanta because now they feel like this is a community that they can tap. Yeah.
There are a lot of North Carolina VCs that regularly come down
here. Boston, Chicago.
And a couple with a permanent representative now.
Yeah. And once a quarter, we throw about 200 or 300 entrepreneurs and investors in a room, and we shut the door, and we feed them. And we sort of let nature take its course. And we're seeing now that we usually have about 4-to-1, Mike, ratio of entrepreneurs to investors, which is pretty remarkable. There's a lot of people that didn't think there were that many investors in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are coming from out of the state, which is great. You know, that's good stuff.
Hey, I want to hear more about these live events that you do. Can you describe what happens at these things?
Okay. Well, the event, which is called Startup Lounge.
Renamed
recently. It used to be called Capital Lounge, now Startup Lounge. Is basically 3.5 hours of chaos. And what we do is that we rent a facility that is owned by a good friend of mine that actually fronted a lot of the money for the first event, or at least in terms of free food did. And it's invitation only. So in contrast to most of the other events in town where anybody can show up as long as you pay a fee, we don't charge a fee to anybody. But you got to be on the list, right?
You got to be somebody.
You got to be an entrepreneur who is serious about building a fast growth startup, and that we really define that as a startup that could sell for $50 million in 5 to 7 years, right? So it's not going to be a flower shop. It's not going to be a life coach. It's not going to be a chiropractor. I mean, they're fine, but that's not who we serve. Or you got to be an investor and be able to point to a track record that says you actually write checks, not just some guy who says he's an investor. Yeah, I'm an investor. I'm a lawyer too, but I'm an investor.
That's right.
And we'll invite people from academia and nonprofit and education, the government sector as observers. And what we do is we exclude the service providers, with the exception of those who sponsor the event. And that's been a major issue with events in the Atlanta area. Is you know, Yogi Berra once said, it's so crowded, nobody goes there anymore. And that's what's happened to a lot of the events. So you're supposed to meet a lot of these entrepreneurs and investors. They're so overrun with people like me stuffing business cards in their pocket, you know, can I have 5 minutes of your time, that they just stop going. And so you go to these events, and they're basically hungry service providers just sort of, you know, desperately seeking
Imagine a room full of Mike Blakes just all coming at you once. You know, I mean, that's just exactly.
That's Orwellian right there.
That's like that Left 4 Dead game, Mike. It's just a bunch of zombies coming at you, you know.
Left 4 Dead, exactly. Yeah. So But what it does, it creates a great energy in the room. We also we don't really have a speaker component. You know, there's a component where Scott and I get up and we crack a couple of jokes and make some community announcements. We thank our sponsors. But it's again, not one of these deals where we have have anybody really get up and sort of make a speech, because that's taking away from the networking time. And we hope that time is being used, and has been used, by people to start conversations about making a deal. And we've had 9 investments confirmed over the last 3 years, really 2 years, that arose as a result of connections that were made at that event.
Right. And we've had entrepreneurs meet other entrepreneurs and ended up merging their companies, yep, or their ideas together, because they maybe realized they had one half of the puzzle. And we've had entrepreneurs find their first customer,
yep,
you know, at our event. And that community spirit, it is a great cocktail party. If you walk in there, you can feel the energy in that thing. I mean, it is just amazing. I can tell you, we're spent after we do it.
Oh, we're dead.
And it is, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Feel the capitalism oozing over.
You can. You can. And you know what? But what's really cool is you see people helping each other too. And that is awesome. When you see an entrepreneur saying, hey, you know what? That's really cool that, you know, what you're doing. I know a guy that may want to look at that deal. You know, this guy I was talking to wasn't a good fit for me, but, you know, let me introduce you to him. Give me your card. There's a lot of that, and it happens thousands of times at that event, and we do it once a quarter. And it is just so amazing when we see those kinds of things happening.
And there's the hope and the tension on the way in, too. I mean, entrepreneurs are going to be put in front of an investor for the first time in their lives. And the tension, you know, I hope I don't screw this up.
That's right.
Some are overcome with it, and they sort of rock in the corner like Leo Mazzoni,
right,
working off the tension.
Right.
But you know, most of them, after a drink or two at the cash bar, will loosen up, and they'll wade in. They'll start getting those conversations going. And, you know, Scott and I are pulled around like pinballs. You know, can you introduce me to this guy? You know, there's this investor. Or, you know, we send out a list of the entrepreneurs to the investors beforehand, so they target 5 or 6 people they want to make sure they talk to. So Scott and I and a couple other folks will try to make sure that those connections happen.
Do you find that some of these entrepreneurs are a lot more effective at articulating what they do and what they want than others? And if so, do you help directly, or do you put them in touch with people that can help them articulate that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, at our first event, it was funny because it really wound up being like an 8th grade dance. You know, we thought we were helping everybody. Yeah, we're going to put investors and entrepreneurs in the same room, and they're going to get together and have a great old time. And what happened is they separated into 2 distinct groups, the investors on one half of the room and the entrepreneurs in the other half of the room.
Oh, that's funny.
And it was like the Berlin Wall was in between.
I felt right at home. But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
But they, you know, they just would not cross. And what we realized was that the entrepreneurs were utterly unprepared for that conversation.
Ill-equipped.
Yeah.
Ill-equipped.
Yeah,
ill-equipped. Absolutely ill-equipped.
Yeah. And so what we did, we decided then we have to equip them. So we set up a free seminar that we do periodically called Pitch Camp. And Pitch Camp is a seminar that is, again, free, and it's a workshop. And we take about 12 entrepreneurs or so, and we lock them in a windowless conference room for 3.5 hours. And using Guantanamo-style indoctrination tactics, we do nothing but teach them about the elevator pitch. And one of the cool things is that we get investors, check writers from the community to help with that education process.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, don't believe me and Scott, because we're not writing checks. I mean, we bounce them all day long.
That's right.
But we get the guys
in. Oh, we write
them.
We write plenty of them.
That's true. Right. That's true. We'll write a check. Don't run to cash
right.
it, though.
Could you save this till Friday?
Could I post-date this to 2019? But the investors, the guys who actually write the checks are in there to say, hey, look, if you want to get somebody like me interested when you meet them at a cocktail party,
don't do this.
That's right.
And what's awesome is we have each of the entrepreneurs give their elevator pitch when they come in, and 3 or 4 hours later when they go back through and everybody does their new pitch after they go through the workshop, night and day. And we've had, 150, 160 CEOs, startup CEOs go through that in the past couple of years. And investors, they can tell us at the event, they'll say, yeah, they can tell who's gone through the motions of Pitch Camp because they're more confident. They're very precise with giving their pitch. And I don't care who you are as an entrepreneur. You cannot pitch your deal without surrounding yourself with people that are like-minded, that can beat you senseless over the head. You cannot do it by yourself. You're too close to it. You got to have people with fresh eyes to say, are you an idiot? Don't say that. You know, you have to have that.
It's fascinating that's a big part of what that we talked about speed school at the beginning of the show. And the first lap that we're talking about is that very same thing.
Yeah.
Is how to tell who you are and what do you do.
And you know,
most people can't do it.
It's not rocket science. Unless you're close to it. if you're that close to it, your elevator pitch becomes like 8 minutes long, and the guy wants to stick a pin in his eye the whole time. He's like, I just want to kill myself. You know,
it's fine for the space elevator.
Exactly. But. Yeah, but not a normal elevator. So yeah, so that's pitch camp is fun. It's always a lot of fun.
Well, I just have to know because you guys see the load I'm carrying.
That's right.
It's all on me. You know, and we've got several things going on in our world, but you guys have pitch camp. You've got the startup lounge. You've got your business. You've got the valuation stuff. How do you keep it all organized? How do you stay on top of it?
We don't.
Well, I mean, you assume we keep it organized.
That's right. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we're very fortunate that we can make calls to the community to get help, you know, from people to help us with various things. But, you know, I'll tell you that this is probably the one thing in my life that I've been the most passionate about, save for my family, you know. And I think Mike is the same way. We genuinely love to help people, you know. And there's something almost romantic or exciting or very Americanish about a kid or a guy who's swinging for the fences and he's putting it all on the line. You know, Mike says it best. You know, this is one of the few countries in the world where the entrepreneur is a folk hero. And, you know, Mike is, you know, and I've spent some time, although you spent some time behind the Iron Curtain in Russia, or at least what was left of the Iron Curtain at that time. It's different. You know, it's different. It's, you're an entrepreneur. What's wrong with you? You know, and here it's, wow, you read a success story about someone who put their mortgage on the line or a kid's college fund and they bet the farm and they went through all this adversity and it made it. You know, everybody has a soft spot, you know, for that. And when you see that kid or that guy who got riffed at Bell South or AT&T, whatever they're calling it these days, you know, and he's going to be a first-time entrepreneur at 50, man, that's, you got to respect that, you know, and you got to help. You got to help because you know what? That guy may end up hiring you like 3 years you know, from now when you don't have a job, you know. And you, but there is that, there's a sense of business karma. I think it does come back, you know. We're trying to do everything we can to get people to, you know, to espouse that as well.
It's no different. I mean, there are a lot of people that serve on boards and they organize their own charities. And I mean, quite frankly, if it's a choice between, you know, watching So You Think You Can Dance,
that's right,
or doing some work on Startup Lounge and helping an entrepreneur, I mean, it's a pretty easy choice.
Well, it's like Gary Vaynerchuk, who you probably are familiar with. He says, if you watch Lost on TV, then you're not going to be a success in this modern
that's
world.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
So just
but stop. if you watch it and understand Lost, you have a shot. Because I got to tell you, I watched that show one time. I thought, my God, I mean, this is like, I don't even know what's going on.
Some there goes our stuff. Sponsor, ABC's out.
Absolutely,
now.
ABC's done. Out, or NBC, or whoever it is. Yeah,
whatever the network is.
Yeah, yeah.
Time Warner, AOL, well, ABC, or something like that. Whatever.
There's a consulting opportunity there for you guys. You know, a little branding issue there, story writing at least.
At least,
you know.
Well, we could hang out with you guys all day, but it is just about time to wrap up the show. But before we let you go, a couple of things that we want to do. Number one, we want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys and are able to access Startup Lounge, your firm, Mike, and, of course, your firm, Scott. And so why don't we do that first, and then we've got a question we'd like to ask you as we wrap.
Sure.
Yeah, well, my firm is Habiff, Arrigetti & Wynn. The website is hawcpa.com. My email is mike@startuplounge.com. My Twitter handle is @unblakeable.
I like
Scott's
that.
Idea, by the way.
Very nice.
It's all branding, baby. Come on.
And my blog site is unblakeable. Yeah.
And, of course, you can go to Startup Lounge at startuplounge.com, and I'm scott@startuplounge.com. And if you have nothing else to do with your spare time, you like to see what I do for my day job, you can go to starpound.net.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you guys to do that?
Wow. I make mistakes every day.
I'm not sure
I can single out
one.
Just one. You know, gosh, Mike, I don't know. There have been so many. Where do I start? You know, I think the mistake that I made early on in my career, after I got out of the military, I'm from Columbus, Georgia. And in Columbus, Georgia, if you're in the technology business, certainly at that time, you basically went to work for Total Systems, TSYS or Synovus or Aflac, or you moved to Atlanta. That was sort of the path. And I think very early on, I was in denial about who I was upstairs. And I made a lot of mistakes because I kept trying to force fit myself into a big company culture. And I should have known better because the entire time I grew up, I was the kid with the great grades that no one could seem to rein in, to calm down in the classroom, you know. And that caused me a lot of grief early on because that was a world that I understood, but I just didn't fit into it, as you can well imagine. So that it took me about 6 or 7 years to sort of trickle my way down to, you know what, I belong here. I belong in startups. And there were a lot of mistakes as a result of that that I ended up paying for, which are, you know, they've all expunged.
That's
now.
Material
yeah.
for a yeah. whole other right. broadcast. Right.
There is, thank God, for statute
of
limitations.
The statute of limitations, absolutely.
I'd say the biggest mistake I made early in my career was thinking to myself, as I'm not a sales guy. Mm. And it limited my career early on immensely. And although I take pride in the technical element of what I do, the fact of the matter is there are a lot of people who can do what I do from a technical standpoint. There are very few people in professional services that are good at selling. I'm not saying I'm good at selling. I work very hard to be average. But making sales a key element of my career was a major turning point. And, it, you know, it's really I probably handle most of our sponsorship relations now, as well as the sort of the sponsorship, I guess, management.
Well, that's because
recruiting.
Most of them don't want to deal with me anymore. So that's,
well,
you know,
by
that's,
default.
Right.
I mean, yeah. But, you know, I think back, you know, even 5 years ago, thinking, you know, having sales be a big part of what I do for a living seemed incomprehensible. Now, not only is it a big part of what I do for a living, it's a big part of what I do for my night job or my hobby.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the biggest epiphany in my life was I got to figure out how to be a revenue generator. Because if you're a revenue generator, you're never going to go hungry.
That's true.
Yeah, you're indispensable.
Absolutely. I mean, I can find, you know, accountants all over the place, but boy, you bring somebody who's bringing in the dollars. You know, that's a very tough resource to let go.
Well, I think the biggest mistake you and I have made, Todd, is waiting this long to have these two guys in the studio, huh?
I'm telling you what, it's amazing that people pay us to live this.
You know, the funny thing is, Mike, their next show, they're going to say, what was the biggest mistake you guys made? They're going to say, having those two guys on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's 30 minutes we're never
exactly.
getting back.
Exactly. They keep looking at the clock on the wall. I don't know if that's a bad thing.
Well, we have had a terrific time. It's been an absolute delight. Thank you both so much for coming on.
For
I hope you'll
us,
come
man.
Back and visit with us again sometime.
Love to. Thanks for
so
having
much.
Us. Thanks for having us.
You are more than welcome. Well, until next time, this is Tone.
You don't even know your name, man. Come on.
He needs pitch camp.
That's it. You do need pitch camp.
Yeah, when is your next
Quick,
pitch
30
camp?
30 seconds or less. What do you do? Yeah.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our producer Lee Cantor, our guest Scott Burkett, and Mike Blake. And the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.